Welcome, everybody. It's a pleasure to be back. Now that we're doing these 6-week courses and taking a break in between, I suppose the risk there is that people kind of get distracted during the break. But it seems as though we have our crew of devoted TSK pas. And I'm very glad to see that. So let me give you a couple of, let me say a couple of things about the course. So in this course is basically a continuation. In theory, people could join in new. I think that would work, but everybody who's logged in right now that I can see is one of the regulars. So we're continuing with what we started in the last quarter, where we're working our way through the first part of through the space section, really, of dynamics. Okay, we'll wait for somebody. Okay. I'll mention one more time, Kathleen is having trouble with her computer. So I'm logged in as Kathleen, and there's actually nobody to help you. If you have a technical problem, I wish you well. but maybe Kathleen will be able to join us in a little while and can get involved. She'll let us know if and when she is able to get her computer running again. So we're starting with Chapter 5 of Dynamics of Time and Space, and we're still focused on the whole issue of space now, and what it means. I think I would say the relationship between space and freedom is, as I think about it right now, that seems to me to be the guiding question and principle. So as I started to prepare for this course, first of all, I realized a few days ago that we hadn't posted the readings. And so I went through and figured out which readings would work for each session. But then when I actually started yesterday to really prepare for this first class, I decided that the readings that I assigned, even though they only cover about, I don't know, it was about 35 pages, something like that. It was too much. It was too much for a 6-week course. So I went in yesterday and made some changes that don't look quite right on the website yet, but they're accurate. I've reduced the reading load. I mean, load isn't the right word. It wasn't a lot of reading to begin with. But what we're going to be covering will be very focused in. We're just going to do a few pages at a time, basically. And so for this class today, I'm assuming that everybody has read that first chapter, that is Chapter 5 of Dynamics. And for this class, we're going to cover from pages 35 to 38. And then next time, we will finish up the chapter. And projecting ahead for the rest of the course, what that means is that we won't actually finish the space section in this quarter. We'll have the last two chapters, I think. So we're just going to do, well, I don't remember exactly, chapters 5, 6, and 7, I think. And then the last two chapters, I suppose that means then we'll do those in the spring. So we will be working in a very focused way with the material in the book. And of course, what that means is, I hope we can, as a result, carefully look at what it is that Rinpoche is suggesting. And he's suggesting it in a variety of ways. You could say he's kind of circling around the same topic or same idea. And as I said already, one way to talk about what that idea is space and freedom, or how a different understanding of space can really create new opportunities for freedom. So we'll work very carefully with the text. Also, though, it means that it becomes more important than ever, more obviously important, maybe, that this is a matter for personal investigation, for doing this kind of inquiry into space and into the structures that depend on our ordinary understanding of space. And so I just want to encourage you, and this is nothing new, but I just want to encourage you to be investigating, over these next 6 weeks, not just tuning in for the class, but really actively looking at these questions. And you might do that in a formal and structured way, where you set aside time every day to really investigate, or you might just do it when you happen to think of it. And if you find it interesting and helpful, then you'll think of it more and more. It'll become a part of what goes on during your day. And I'm sure to some extent that's already true for all of you, but that's what we want to try to be doing this week. So a couple of other very preliminary matters, and then we can start in. The main other point I wanted to let you know about is that I'm going to be in England at the end of March, and I'm not quite sure yet if that has an impact on our last class. I'll have to wait and see. It'll probably mean at a minimum that I do it from England, but that shouldn't make any difference. But there's some timing issues. We may have to adjust the time of the last class by half an hour or so. But the reason I'm going to be in England, well, the main reason is I'm stopping off on my way to Germany for some other things. But while I'm there, I'm going to be giving a couple of talks on TSK, a couple of little workshops, little 3-hour workshops. So number one, if you know anybody in England who might be interested in attending those, you could let them know, and just contact me or Kathleen, and you can get the details. I'm going to be giving one of these workshops in London on Sunday the 25th, and then one in Bristol on Monday the 26th. And the purpose of those workshops, besides just introducing TSK, is also to build up a little energy toward holding a retreat or an intensive in England, which will happen in the fall sometime. So you can stay tuned. We'll announce all that on the website. Which reminds me that it's not too early to start thinking about a TSK retreat that we're going to be doing here at Rock Malling in August. Now, we've tried to do that the last couple of years, or at least last year, and it didn't work. We didn't get enough interest. So, I mean, I'm sure there's interest, but for various reasons, people couldn't make it. So maybe start thinking about that. The dates, I think, are something like August 10th through 14th, something like that. So you could be thinking about whether that works for you, whether you could participate, because many of you have taken part in TSK intensives. It's a great way to explore the vision. Okay, those are all the practical concerns. So now let's get started with this very short reading. As I said, we're going to be doing very short readings. And I want to start with the first paragraph. So let's just look at it. The ways of knowing governed by reason and logic will inevitably reduce space to physical absence. Seeking to know things for certain, they will only know things that are certain. So let's start with the second sentence. I love this kind of wordplay. I don't know if everybody does. The idea of knowing something for certain, for sure, you end up only knowing certain kinds of things. the things that are certain. So there's actually three things to say here. You know, knowing things for certain, you only know things that are certain, which of course means that you only know certain things. And when we talk about freedom, which goes hand in hand with greater knowledge, this is exactly the starting point, the issue for us to be investigating. We have a way of making sense out of our experience. We have a way of engaging the world from moment to moment and day to day, in which we have a self that encounters things and that tries to make sense out of the world in terms of reason and logic. And all of that is completely bound up with a particular understanding of space. So here, if we go back to the first sentence, Rinpoche is saying that, you know, he runs the connection in one direction, but you could also reverse it. He says, if we rely on reason and logic, then the only way we can make sense of space is as a physical absence. That is, there are things in the world, physical substances, and space is what's going on when there's nothing there, you know, which is what we looked at a lot in the last quarter. You could also run that connection the other way. If your understanding of space is what our ordinary understanding is, which is that space is a physical absence, then when we try to make sense of things, we will rely on reason and logic. Now, there's nothing wrong with reason and logic. They're very important and valuable tools, and we use them all the time. And the word logic may suggest a kind of technical discipline, but, you know, we always use logic. This may be saying too much, but it seems as though any time we make a statement, we are operating within the rules of logic. That's just the way we understand the world. So we have that possibility, working with reason and logic, understanding space as a physical absence and nothing more. But that's not the only possibility, and that's why why we have the TSK vision to open that up, and in particular why we're looking at the question of space. And so, you know, the focus that we're going to be looking at and really trying to explore in these coming weeks, I've already talked about it in terms of freedom, but you could also talk about it in terms of a way of knowing. If space is different, then different ways of knowing become available, right? And instead of knowing certain things that can be known for certain, things that have a particular identity, right? If that's the way of knowing we use, we're limited. Other ways of knowing, which are linked to other forms of space, give us new possibilities. And that's really what we want to look at. A different kind of knowledge in which we no longer know only certain things and only know the kinds of things that are certain. Now, it may be that there's a different kind of certainty that we gain through that way of knowing, but it's not going to be based on certain things that can be known for certain. I'm playing with this word certain here because Rinpoche plays with it. But, you know, typically or in our discussions, we've talked about identity, right? We've said things have a certain identity, and so we relate to them in terms of that identity and in terms of our own identity as well. And all of that is tied up with a particular kind of space in which there are certain things that we can know. Other things or other ways of knowing, maybe they don't depend on things so much, that do not have that same focus, that same dependence on identity. So, you know, I've probably driven that point into the ground. You know, I've probably said something that people already understand. But you know, it's a good idea to stop and ask yourself. I mean, if what I've been saying makes good sense to you. You may not know exactly where to go with it, but if it makes good sense, then that's an indication that you are really in tune with where this vision is heading, where dynamics in particular is heading, and what we're going to be doing here. If it seems puzzling, which it may, but if it seems puzzling, this would be a good time to try to clarify that, because I'm kind of talking about the assumptions, the basic way of seeing things. It's possible for space to be different, which means there's a different kind of knowing available and possible also. So if anybody has any questions about that, this would be a good time to raise them, either by speaking up or with our old friend, the chat corner down here. But I'm going to go ahead right now, and then if questions come up, we'll work with it. So one of the things that, not covering very much territory from week to week, not in the regions, one of the things that makes possible is that we can take a little more time to practice, kind of get used to the idea of practicing. I want us to do a little practice right now. So this is going to be a very kind of general practice. I mean, what's the right way to say that? We just want to look into this basic question and do it in an experiential way. So if we say practice or exercise, that's maybe saying too much. We just want to take a look right now in our experience at what we've been discussing here. So the question I want you to ask, excuse me, the question I want you to ask yourselves for a couple of minutes now is, in your experience right now, what's going on besides certain things? So when we look around us, we tend to see, we almost inevitably see, certain things, right? There's a clock. I'm just looking at my desk here. There's a photograph. There's the book. There's the computer. There are all those certain things. So the question is, what else is going on other than certain things? Probably that's going to take you to your, what we would ordinarily call, subjective experience, certain feelings, perhaps. Now, notice I said certain feelings. The moment you label something so that it becomes a certain thing, then we have that way of knowing in operation. A feeling can also be a certain thing. But the realm of fear, see, feeling is so much less identified, so much less clearly defined and labeled, that that's a likely place to look if you look for what's not a certain thing. But you may also turn a feeling into a certain thing. The moment you look back and say, oh, I'm feeling bored or interested or anticipating whatever it is, when you label it, it becomes a certain thing. So what we want to do for a couple of minutes now is ask, what's going on in our experience that is not a certain thing, that is not identified in that way? So let's go ahead and take a couple of minutes to do that, and then we'll see where it takes us. Okay. Let's come back together. And I'm going to ask you if there's anything you found interesting and would like to share. I see a couple of people have already written comments. Wow. Okay, well, good. That gives us something to work with. So Sudhi says, as awareness goes more toward the edge of becoming, the certain things subside into the background, and there is a more alive not knowing what is next, a dynamic possibility, a vast probable. Getting poetic on us here, Sudhi. That's nice. And then you say, I wish I could dwell more there than the deadened certainties. Well, I think it's true that what is certain, when we, when what we know for certain, you could just say it offers no opportunity for surprise, right? No opportunity for new knowing. We know it for certain, which means we can classify it, we can file it away, and it's like, well, there's so many different images you could use. It's like if you've been out collecting specimens, let's say, as a scientist, and then you put them in your specimen bottles and you put them up on the shelf and you put a label on them, then unless you're actively working with them, it's just a bunch of bottles with labels on them, and you pretty much forget what's inside them. I've been rearranging my books lately, these last few days. I'm starting to, and a book is just the title, unless you can in some way engage it. Well, okay, enough specific examples. I think Sudhi's point is exactly where we'd like to go. The sense that there is something more dynamic, something more alive. So, David says something, here he says, there's a sensitivity or awareness, a field perhaps, within which sensual input arises from the senses, where there is room for or capacity for further direction for meaningfulness. Okay, well, I'm pretty much going to let that speak for itself. What we would expect as a possibility is a greater aliveness, and I think that's what both those comments point to. Now, Bruce has a comment here, and he sent it privately, but I don't think you meant to send it privately, Bruce, because it is definitely. Oh, I see. Now you've switched out of private. Okay, you repeated it for everyone. Good. So let's look at it. The generation of certainty of certain things was happening, but I couldn't say quite how. Well, that's a very interesting and somewhat different place to look, because in fact we are usually generating certainty. We live in a world where we know certain things for certain. We know these certain things, and that's what we know. And that somehow that certainty has to be generated. And so you're saying, well, how does that happen? And that's a great place to look because it seems pretty clear that we can't know that for certain. We would have to know that in some different way. If we knew it for certain, then we'd have to ask, well, how does that knowing, that certain knowing, get generated? So we're going to come back to that uncertain or differently certain or differently known or knowing. Okay, so when I identify what is not a certain thing, it becomes certain. So Bruce has several. I am repeating this because some of you are not on a computer; you're on the phone. So Bruce says, when I identify what is not a certain thing, it becomes certain. Yes, identification and certainty just go together. And so when we do a practice, and then you write something about it, if you try to describe it, it's you're going in the direction of certainty. You identify it and it becomes certain. So you just need to be aware of that, and it's not That doesn't mean that you've done something wrong or that you've gone off on the wrong track. It's just a necessary consequence of looking back on something. It's really only when you're within the experience that it could be not certain in this particular way. And that, since our focus is space, you could say when you're within experience, the within of that is pointing towards a different way of relating to space. Okay, so, and Bruce has a couple of other comments. So, certainty is not a certain thing, rather, it certifies. What is that certification? Well, that's very nice. As I said at the beginning, I'm very fond of these plays for words, so I like that. It certifies the experience of discovering something as being a certain way, means that you have certified it as being so, right? You've got a certificate of authenticity. And you're asking, well, how does that arise, or what is the nature of that certification? Right? Is it, on the one hand, it's clearly a kind of a naming, right? And that's why the word certificate is a pretty useful word there. It's like you a certificate of authenticity, or someone completes a training program, they get a certificate of completion. You've named it. So what is the nature? Is it just the naming? The naming seems to point back towards something. So suppose someone has done a training program and they get a certificate of completion. The certificate says something about what happened that made it possible or appropriate to issue the certificate. And that's what certainty is like. You say, yeah, I've labeled this, I've identified it, I know what it is. It points towards a series of events that has happened one way or another. That's what it means to go towards certainty. But how that happens, we don't really know. And then Bruce has one more point here. Certain things are particulars. Each emerges out of an implicit fullness or wholeness, it seems. Okay, so that possibility of discovering an implicit fullness or wholeness, that seems like it would be helpful as an alternative. Rather than being a certain thing, there's something that is uncertain, but if you say it that way, that sounds like it's less than certain. It's not so interesting because it's just uncertain. But if you say it there's a fullness, so I have a tendency to use the word certain, but if you say there's a fullness or wholeness, then yeah, I think that's going in a good direction. And that's related very much to what David said, a field within which input arises, right? And Sudhi says something about the background, which also has the quality of being more alive or dynamic. That is where we're headed. Right? And Michael says, also, I think we're all kind of investigating the same point. He says, drifting off into feeling, the need to identify also drifts away, and a pleasurable openness is enough for the mind. Well, I think it's good to identify that feeling as pleasurable. It's dynamic, it's pleasurable, it has a certain kind of fullness or wholeness. The lack of our usual certainty and an opening into a different kind of space or space relationship, let's say, has these positive qualities. And that's if it didn't have those qualities, or if it didn't lead toward a different kind of knowledge, there'd be no particular point in pursuing it. But we are pursuing it because it does have those qualities. Okay, that's good. That's exactly, I think, the kind of thing we want to be exploring. So let's go. I want to jump. We're not going to do word. We're not going to go word by word through the chapter, although, one could. But I want to jump ahead to page 36 and see if I can find the place. I didn't actually mark it, but Yeah, okay, at the very top of the page. Let's go back to the bottom of 35 to make sense out of it. He's talking about other ways of knowing, and he says we need to have an appreciation for possibility, which is the reverse side, you could say, of focusing on certainty, right? If we know something for certain, then we know that things can also only be a certain way, right? But possibility allows other possibility, allows calls that into question. So we have an appreciation for possibility, and that appreciation, he says, shifts the prevailing atmosphere. So the word atmosphere is a nice word here. It's like what people have been saying about a background or an openness or a wholeness or an implicit fullness. It's all in that range. So there is a shift in the atmosphere. And then Rinpoche actually uses, he treats that in a very concrete way. He says, you know, atmosphere like the atmosphere on our planet, says a wind stirs, right? In the atmosphere, a wind arises. It's, you could say, when everything is certain, when we know only certain things, but those things are certain, it's like the kind of weather system where everything feels very closed in, you know, and lifeless. There is no wind, you know, the kind of thing I'm pointing toward. So a wind stirs, reversing the trend towards stagnation. And then he talks about that in terms of a space that has no occupancy. We'll look, I think, more at the notion of occupancy. That's not what I want to go to right now. What I do want to go to is what he says here about properties appearing without ownership. No one takes possession, and nothing whatsoever needs to be established or pointed out or made concrete. So that's a really clear way, it seems to me, of pointing towards the difference. You know, on the one hand, we have things that are certain and things that are known for certain. And on the other hand, we have a way of engaging our experience in which nothing needs to be established or pointed out or made concrete. And the way he describes that is as property without ownership. So you could think about that, and you know, maybe this is a little bit more than you would see on first reading. When you say property without ownership, it sounds as though you want to say, as though you're saying, well, nobody owns the experience. So the self doesn't come in and own the experience. And that's true. That's one part of it. But there's actually something more fundamental, it seems to me, going on when you talk about property without ownership. And that is that in experience, or your experience has certain properties. But those properties do not necessarily point towards something that is the owner of those properties. In other words, I have this, I have a light on the desk in front of me, a lamp, I should say. I have a lamp on the desk in front of me. So if I looked in a very fresh way, then the properties of the lamp, so it's black, it's actually not plugged in, it's the one I'm looking at, it's lying on its side. So it's black and it has a certain shape to it, and I can see the bulb. Let's see, it's hard to describe this in such a in a way that's sufficiently open. But really what I'm trying to point towards is there's the blackness, there's the shape of it, there's where it is in relationship to other things on my desk. None of that necessarily points toward it being a lamp. When I say it's a lamp, then I've created a thing that owns those properties. And I think when Rinpoche says here property without ownership, he's pointing toward the possibility that there doesn't have to be an owner of whatever it is that shows up in our experience. So this is actually a very useful and important way to be practicing, I think, during this coming week and in general, because in the exercise, in the practice we were just doing, in the little experiment we did, we looked to see, you know, what's going on other than objects. But now, this idea of properties without ownership raises the possibility that we could be engaging experience, engaging the things in our world, all these certain things, all these things we know for certain, right? Without moving away from the possibility of no ownership, you know, we could be engaging all of the certainties that we that make up our ordinary experience without making that certainty into something that we know for certain. It's just the feeling of certainty itself is a property of our experience. So when I look around the room and I see a clock and a painting and a book and all of these different kinds of things, I identify them all. They're all certain things. But the certainty itself is, and this will become more clear in later weeks, I think, but the certainty itself is something, is just a property, and it has no ownership. So if I look at the book, its bookness, you know, its identity as a book doesn't close down everything else in my experience about the book. It's just one more thing. It's just another property. So, if you look at the last paragraph in this section, and we will not have a chance to talk about the following section, but if you look at the last paragraph, I think it makes the point clearly. It says, contrary to our usual assumptions, okay, the ordinary physical space that we are all accustomed to allows appearance. But it neither embraces nor allows the body of what appears. And I'll skip to the last, I'll skip a sentence or two. Since what appears in space remains space, it shares this non-embodiment. Appearance preserves the insubstantiality of space. So what I'm suggesting is that the insubstantiality of what appears is another way of talking about property without ownership. The book appears and all of its qualities, it's you know, I mean, it appears to me as something visual. I'm not touching it, and I'm not really looking at the words right now. That would be a whole other level. It's just a thing, right? It's just this object in front of me. But ordinarily, we focus on the you know, what makes that a certain thing. It's bookness. And what this passage is suggesting is that that embodiment, right, the body of the book, the bo there's an appearance of a book. And the appearance ordinarily points back towards its bookness, you know, toward the label that I give it, which lets it be a certain thing. But we don't have to do that. We can let the appearance remain as appearance. Right? Let's just take one look. We're out of time, but let's look forward for a moment to page 38. And Because this is another place where Rinpoche talks about this. I think probably the best place to look is on the second full paragraph, the second sentence. He says, "The properties that appear are referred back to entities with substance, and the depth of space gives way to the density of identity, which remains a surface phenomenon." Well, there's too much here to really talk about in much depth, but hopefully we've set this up enough so that it's clear what more or less what's being said here. Appearance without substance, right, means that there's the appearance of substance, and we don't have to turn away from that. That really is where I want to suggest that we be working in this next during this next week as an ongoing practice. When you see something, when you engage something, when you're in a situation, when you're dealing with people, in every moment, in other words, whenever this occurs to you to do, or whenever you find it valuable to do, substance is just the appearance of substance. And when you take that approach, then you're opening up to space possibilities in a different way. And that's pretty much where we want to be working, or what we want to be working toward. So, Sudi asks, "Is it like a red patch on the grass without assigning it to a rose or a piece of paper lying there?" So yes, I think that really helps clarify the point. So Sudi's thinking of a situation, you're looking out at the lawn, and you see a red patch, and you don't have to worry about whether it's a rose or a piece of paper, kind of crumpled up piece of red paper, let's say. For certain purposes, you'd really want to know that. But just looking out, that doesn't have to be a concern. However, that particular example, I think, helps point towards what this is not saying, or toward an approach that we don't need to try to put into practice. It's not as though you have to unknow the roseness of the rose, or what's a better way to say that? You look out and you see the rose, and you identify it as a rose, and you know for certain that it's a rose. Maybe you're mistaken, but usually you're right. You know for certain that it's a rose. But that certain thing, that knowing for certain, is also just appearance. It's the appearance of the rose. There's nothing, you don't know the rose. You only know the rose because you have reason and logic and a particular way of engaging with objects and space in which everything is referred back to an identity. That's all just part of the same structure. What these passages are suggesting is that there's a different way to engage that experience of seeing a rose, in which it's just the appearance of a rose. Appearance without ownership, or I should, the phrase he uses is properties without ownership. So you could do that in such a way where you'd say, well, there's these properties of redness and so on, and I don't have to assign the identity rose. And that's an interesting way to practice. But it's also possible to do it in a more kind of everyday way. You see the rose, and that's based on a number of properties that everything kind of comes together to give you the impression of rose, but it's properties without ownership. So in that sense, you could say there is no rose, or the identification, the certification of the rose as a rose is also appearance or properties without ownership. It's also just another property. The name is there along with everything else. Okay, that's plenty for today, but I think that gives you a pretty clear approach to investigate in this coming week. And so I hope you discuss it on the website and share your insights and Next week, we'll go ahead with the second half of the chapter, pages 38 to 41.